First parish has told us. You're waiting for that. I like it. Okay. I've been trying to trace with you, in part in this room and in part in the Wednesday night chug, some of the larger grand themes of each parsha. Obviously, the parsha details Jewish history and it details moral history, but there are certain very, very large scale values. Bereishis is creation, and Noach is morality, and Lech Lecha is departure and mission, and Vayera is revelation and submission to Hashem's will. There are large issues about human consciousness, religious experience. I spoke in Chayasar about the domesticity of Avraham. So these are the issues that pop out about character and identity. And Toldos is a little bit difficult because Toldos, you've got manipulation, and you've got stealth and subterfuge and issues that we've together spoken about this week in different contexts. And if you want, I gave a share that people thought was appropriate in the beginning of this recorded on YU about this is Yaakov's Akeda, that Yaakov has to submit his will to his mother's Ruach HaKodesh inspired order in the same way that Avram has to submit his own moral compuncture or conjectures. But there's something larger in the beginning of the Parsha. Any of you have a parent, a mother, sometimes who's a gynecologist or want to enter and become a gynecologist? This is an interesting Parsha for a gynecologist because it's very, very anatomical. Rivka feels the children and Vayisurot Esraba Nimbik Kirba. We know where the children are. We know that they're in her womb. And then when she consults with this religious person, and we'll talk maybe a little bit later if we have time, so he gets very, very physical. And Shnei goyim bivitneich, u'shnei leomim mime'ayich yiparedu. She could have said the same thing without talking about her belly and her womb and her me'ayim, even to a degree that, obviously, from a medical standpoint, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing... That's not the way you talk. Let's say you go over to a woman who's pregnant. Oh, you have a nice womb. How many children do you have in your womb? What do you think they're going to come out of your belly? That's not the way. The Torah is drawing our attention to something by being so anatomical, so graphic about describing a woman's body during childbearing and pregnancy. And Chazal picked up on this. And there's a Medrash that says that there's even only a very thin membrane separating the two twins. What I think you're seeing in Parshas Toldos is the power of free will and the power of decision-making. There's a setup here. Everyone else in Sefer Bereishis has been chosen, has been selected, has been preordained. Their fate has been determined for them and by them. Clearly, Yitzchak is named well before he's born. So there's a sense of expectation. There's a sense of profiling. This is your future. This is your name. You'll settle into your mission. And of course, as evidence of that, he's completely passive at the Akedah. Essentially, he doesn't have to create his own identity or his own future. It's already been packaged for him. Avram, we don't see the struggle. We don't see him discovering HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, he has to make that one choice. But once he buys in, everything has already been paved for him. Lech lecha mi'artzecha mi'molatcha mi'beis avicha latzesha raka v'eschalega agado v'ebracha v'erachecha baruch. Everything is already, there's a package deal. You either accept the package and you buy it or you don't. But all of a sudden here we see two people who share the same genes, who share the same parents, as unlike any of the other brothers in Sefer Bereishis, or at least at the very least have different mothers. They share the same parents and they share the same womb. They share the same placenta. They're together in the me'ayim. They're together in the beten. And for all intents and purposes, Yaakov could have been Esav, and Esav could have been Yaakov. The exact same person. They have inclinations, perhaps. But Esav isn't born as a tzayid b'feh. Neither is Yaakov. That's why the Torah, this is the only parsha that describes child development. Everywhere else in Sefer Bereishis, we have very little discussion about children. We meet them as adults. We see Yaakov's children being born in Vayetze, and they're not really that dramatically involved in the proceedings. A little bit with Reuven, with the flowers and the rub, but essentially they're on the sidelines. And then when they become adults already in Parshas Vayishlach, Shimon and Levi intervene, and Shimon and Levi ransack Shechem, and of course as adults, they participate in the narrative. But here we have a snapshot of kids growing up, Vayigdalu Hanarim, and they act upon their tendencies, and they make their choices, and they meet their fate, and they become their fate. But those trajectories were determined by them and them alone. Yaakov chose to become Yaakov, and Esav chose to become Esav. Of course, there are predilections and inclinations, but Chazal tells a very beautiful medrash that David was also born Admoni. Just like Esav is described as Vayitzeh Rishon Admoni, that's exactly how David's described. And you couldn't be talking about two different people. David's sensitive. David tries to preserve life. David is not an Ish Sadeh. He's an Ish of Ruach. And so just because you're born an Admoni doesn't become you end up, doesn't mean necessarily, inevitably, you end up developing into an Esav. And that's really the takeaway Parshas told us in a grand lesson. The unlimited power of freedom of choice, regardless of Bechira Chavshas, of where you began and whom you are and whom you shared a womb with and what DNA you have and what your last name is and what your trajectory is. You make your decisions. You shape your life. You determine your future. It doesn't always come easy. Yaakov's life is riddled with struggle. Yaakov's life is, and the most incredible thing to me that I think about each year in Toldos is, unlike any of the Avos, Yaakov never receives communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He only receives it in Vayetzeh, at that mountain. So for all intents and purposes, he doesn't even know if he made the right choice. He doesn't know if HaKadosh Baruch Hu credits his decision. There's no, you would expect Hashem to intervene, to visit Yaakov in a dream, to accredit the decision. Don't worry, I know you did it through subterfuge. I know you're probably racked with guilt. I know you're probably riddled with uncertainty. You're the one. You'll receive the brachas of Avram. Hashem doesn't appear to him until Vayetzeh, and we'll talk about that next week, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him at the mountain. So he never even receives the approval of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He makes the decision. He struggles through uncertainty. He struggles through the unknown, and his name represents that struggle. And more than any other Av, he becomes Yaakov. He could have been Esav. He shared the same womb. So it's a good parsha and a good thought to consider. Here we are, halfway through the Hanukkah, and you're not always conscious, that you really are shaping your future here. And if I could give you one pill, it would be that vision pill, that every decision you make here this year ripples throughout the rest of your life. It's an incredible ripple effect because it's such a concentrated experience. It's so saturated. You're shaping whom you are. You're forging your identity. Every decision you make will affect the rest of your life because you're ironing out your identity and your religious identity. And it's hard because when you're young, you don't have that long-term vision. You don't have that sense of the magnitude and the impact. And I could just give that to you. You'd realize in this moment is not just another minute of my 18 or 19-year-old experience, but is the food for future years. I'm shaping who I am. And we've talked a lot about dreaming and dreaming large, about what you can become, not just in life, what you can become in religion, and about empowering yourself to see needs and to fill needs rather than, when you're a child, you see yourself as someone sitting on the sideline as a spectator. They're the president of the shul and the rabbi and the teacher and the... And how do you segue into a position where now it's about me? What roles can I play and how can I contribute? How can I be a leader? How can I shape the future of our community? So this is decision time, and no one should sideline or acquit themselves because I don't have the background or I don't... You could be Yaakov or Esav, they're interchangeable. You make a decision and you live that life and that becomes your identity. That becomes your one shot. You live life once. You don't get a redo. It's not in the way we're conscious of. We're talking about Gilgal. That's not part of our experience, the second shot. So we make our decisions and we try to shape ourselves and the world around us. And I think to me that's always the larger takeaway. There's smaller, obviously, issues that emerge. But if you ask me one word to describe Toldos, right, one word to describe Vayera, revelation and submission. One word to describe Lechacha, mission and departure. One word to describe Noach, moral culpability. One word. What's that one large word? Okay, I know, not that. What's that one large word? Free will. Freedom of choice. And that's why, to highlight, the story has to be gynecological. Shnei goyim mivitnech. Shnei lo mimimayach. It's in the same beten. It's in the same b'nei me'ayim. It's literally the same guts, the same blood, the same placenta, the same... Can't get any more simple. Now you decide. V'yikilu ha'narim. You shape your fate. Nothing is preordained. Nothing is predetermined. And that's... Clearly, the narrative of Yaakov as opposed to the other people. Even Avraham, who made a great, bold choice, but it was a one-off choice. And once he chose, HaKadosh Baruch already provided the package, the magic carpet, the entire proceedings. He had to buy in. But more often than not, we have to choose, and we also have to carve out that choice and fulfill that choice and struggle with that choice and struggle with uncertainty. Very few of us have that type of opportunity, such as Avraham, where we make this one bold choice and then everything settles in. More frequently, more often, a life resembles Yaakov, where we make choices to become something, we hatch a vision, we try to work hard at it, and then that the road between our choice and our fulfillment is paved with both uncertainty and struggle. And that can very often dampen our choices, and that can often deprive us of the courage and the strength to actualize those choices. Well, if it happened more readily and more immediately, now I have to struggle for it. Well, that's Yaakov's story. Okay, so it's an important parsha, an important lesson. We'll get back to another important lesson a little bit later about Rivka and how she responds to this adversity of two children in her belly. Okay, let's move over. One other issue before we say good Shabbos to everyone. I talked about Rivka giving birth to two identical children. And then she starts to realize something is awry, something is afoot, Simcha, something is a little bit off. So she hatches a very important decision. But before the decision, you see her raising a question that prompts that decision. Tomer im kein, lama ze anochi. How do you process struggles in life? How do you process decisions in life? How do you process quandaries? How do you process? It's an important question to ask as a religious person. Not only because you want to navigate that issue through religious experience, but because whether you bring religion into life's decisions reflects how tethered religion is to life. That's really the goal. I'm trying so hard to get you guys to connect what's going on in this room to your identity. And it's really hard because there's a space. There's an identity space. And it's very easy to create cognitive dissonance and engage fully and even to daven fully and then to walk away to some other place where religion is sidelined and not there. And the goal is that religion should worm its way into the deep core of your identity and affect every moment. And moments when you're acting in ways that aren't patently religious, but you still feel that there's a... And that's the great, great pursuit of shleimus in life. That Avram Zakein by Hashem Rechaz Avram Makol, that it was a suffusive, all-encompassing, all-enervating religious identity. And one of the bellwether litmus tests is when you reach major decisions in life. Do you process them existentially, and is your existence and your identity religious? Do you ask yourself that question, Lama Zeh Anochi? Where you just face the stress and the pressure and the tactics and, well, I have a hard time and this is facing me, I have to find the right doctor and I have to find the right... Or, what is the Kodesh Baruch Hu telling me by this? It's a very hard question. We don't have prophecy anymore. It used to be pretty easy. You faced hardship, you faced adversity, you went to a Navi. The Navi told you, the reason your field is struggling, the reason your family is ill, the reason your finances, the reason is because you possess the following flaw and you have to work at it. And you went back and you improved and you cleaned things up and you had this real direct input. So we no longer have prophecy. So that type of direct one-to-one correspondence, the reason, and unfortunately sometimes you hear monstrous people say it about others and that's despicable. The reason that people lost their lives, the reason that there was an accident, playing God when other people are suffering, such triumphalism, self-cockiness or self-confidence. Never, ever play God with other people's suffering. And you hear this from time to time. It's just disgusting. But even with yourself, that level of precision, why am I suffering? Why am I facing this? What does this mean for my life? We go into tactical mode. How will I solve the illness? Let's find the best doctors. Let's find another source of income. Let's speak to a marriage counsel. Let's solve. We have so many solutions in our lives that we immediately fall back on, let's find the service that can help with this issue. And let's build the emotional resources to navigate this issue and to be able to withstand the pressure. At what point do these little signs that happen become existential markers and say, what about my life led to this? And what is message is the Kodesh Baruch Hu delivering in a rational framework? Hashem isn't delivering a thunderstorm so that I'll wake up. That's the world of prophecy and supernatural. We don't live in that world. But how can I naturally say the reason I became this person is because of the following behavioral patterns, the people in my life, the values I place? That's what happens when people make these major turnarounds in their life. They wake up. They realize, the world is speaking to me. My life is speaking to me. I understand there's a message here. I'm trying to probe the message. She gets it. Lama Zeh Anochi. Emblazon that into your consciousness. Ask yourself that question often. Lama Zeh Anochi. Am I investing in the right areas? Am I so much of life's failures is you just, you find yourself trapped in endless pursuits, and you never, people say, wake up and smell the coffee and shake yourself into awareness. And why am I doing this? Is this the life I want for myself? Is this the person I want to be? Is this where I want to live? Is this how I saw myself? This pressure of life just drags you and draws you. And the ability to take a step back. Take a step back and drill the thread. Step back. Take a step back and where Lama Zer Anochi, and to process that, Lidrosh Elokim. She doesn't go to a gynecologist, she doesn't go to a doctor, she doesn't go to, she goes to, and there weren't Batei Midrashos and Batei Knesses, there was endless supply of shtibel. She wasn't living in Queens, right? She didn't just show up at a shtibel. She had to find the one location where people were pursuing the word of Hashem. That she had to solicit it, she had to travel. It's that one location, Lidrosh Elokim. Goes back to what I said in the past. Do you live with rabbinic influence in your life? Or do you live, remember the offset between